Welcome to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeal. Call the first case for today, United States of America versus Marvin Maurice Cotton. Here first, Mr. Barlow.
May it please the court, I'm Doug Barlow. I'm from Beaumont, appointed to represent Mr. Cotton in this case. The issue is fairly straightforward. The issue in this case is the simple matter of whether the magistrate judge and the district court committed reversible error in denying Mr. Cotton's motion to suppress the contraband in this particular case. I think the parties have agreed in their briefs about what the standard of review is. Of course, the questions of law are to be reviewed de novo. The questions of fact are to be reviewed for clear error. We have kind of a mixed bag in this particular case because of the interpretation of the facts, and we submit that the trial court misinterpreted those facts to incorrectly reach the result that there was a traffic violation at the inception. And of course, as that factual standard requires, this court must reverse fact findings that are clearly erroneous, and we believe that the record demonstrates that they're clearly erroneous. So the facts are important in this case. The initial stop is actually shown to be based upon what the officer concluded was a traffic violation. We submit that the record shows that that's an impossible conclusion of the traffic violation. The Texas Transportation Code section, I believe it's quoted in the government's brief, that supports the stop is that a vehicle approaching an emergency vehicle has to either move to the opposite lane or slow down 20 miles below the speed limit in this case. And a clear reading of the record demonstrates while there was a dispute about where the emergency vehicle was located and where an abandoned vehicle was located, the one fact that's clear, the officer Viator, the seizing and arresting officer in this case, he was intent from the very start on stopping Mr. Cotton's vehicle based upon information he had received from another officer in the Houston area.
Does subjective intent matter?
I believe that it's the totality of the circumstances that demonstrates that he was just going forward on a hunch. He was intent upon stopping Mr. Cotton's vehicle. He's made that very clear.
We've got lots of cases where the Border Patrol is waiting for him to make a mistake so they can pull him over. I mean, they've been told by other units, look for this car, and that doesn't seem to matter.
His basis that he stated for a stop, though, was a violation of the Texas Transportation Code 545.157. And I submit that that was entirely misplaced. The officer stated, Officer Viator stated that he was outside of his vehicle at the time that he noticed Mr. Cotton's vehicle passing by his vehicle. And it was after that the vehicle passed Mr. Viator that he says he stepped inside and activated his radar. And
were his lights on when the car passed?
There was some dispute about whether his emergency lights were on. I don't recall specifically. I think Mr. Cotton said that his emergency lights were not activated. He said that they were, as I recall.
So that dispute in the evidence, I presume?
That is a dispute in the evidence. But what is clear from the evidence is that the officer was not inside his vehicle.
Well, that's the whole reason for the Texas laws, because officers were outside their vehicles and they were struck by cars passing by at 70 miles per hour. That's the reason for the law.
Yeah, I agree with you, Your Honor. But there's, under the facts in this particular case, he doesn't say that he was going 70 miles per hour when he passed his vehicle. He says he clocked him and he was going 70 miles per hour after he passed his vehicle. And the Texas statute doesn't say that you cannot resume a speed of the speed limit after you've passed a vehicle. It's just a factual basis of whether or not.
Was there evidence that he slowed down to 50?
I don't believe there was evidence either way other than Mr. Viator saying that he clocked him after he got back in his vehicle and he had passed. And I submit to you that the Texas statute that it's based upon doesn't say anything about the speed of a vehicle after it's passed an emergency vehicle. So we submit that the trial court's conclusion, there was another conclusion the trial court made, was that whether or not he actually committed an offense, Mr. Cotton, was irrelevant to the finding, and that contravenes the Texas law. Texas law is that it is relevant whether or not a traffic offense was actually committed, and cited in page 17 of my brief, Texas appellate court said that an officer did not observe a traffic offense. He only thought he had. And the trial court in that case properly determined that the officer did not observe a traffic violation under the Texas Transportation Code and therefore had no authority to stop the vehicle in that subject case. So the trial court's conclusion that it's irrelevant whether or not he actually committed the offense, we submit that's erroneous also. But that brings us to the other issue that we should not have even reached in this case, and that's the issue of consent. Mr. Cotton should have been stopped in the first place, but we did get to the consent issue. I submit also that the facts don't support the conclusions in that regard either. There was a lengthy detention of Mr. Cotton that ultimately led to the questioning about searching, and that's all part of this totality of the circumstances that demonstrates that this is a Fourth Amendment violation, somewhat of a fishing expedition by Officer Viator. The government even quotes in its brief the testimony about whether or not there was consent, and it's clear from reading that I think parties agree that the tape is unintelligible in the first part of the questioning about can I search the vehicle. So Mr. Viator was called, and he testified that Mr. Cotton said, yeah, you can search it, but then that is belied by the rest of the questioning because the tape clearly indicates Mr. Viator continued to ask him if it was okay to search it, to which Mr. Cotton continually replied to his luggage, yeah, you can search my luggage. We submit that, therefore, there's inadequate showing that there was consent to search the vehicle in the first place. All of this, I submit, fits with what I referred to as the totality of an unreasonable stop with a prolonged detention with questionable, at best, consent that demonstrates that Fourth Amendment violation. I've cited in the brief and under this court's ruling in Macias and some of the other cases, the government must show that the stop was justified at its inception, and this court must consider if the officer's subsequent actions were reasonably related in scope to the stop. And it's clear that Mr. Officer Viator's actions were not related in any way to the traffic stop. He even said at one point that Mr. Cotton had given him an easy reason. That was his language, easy reason to pull him over because he was not smart enough to move to the other lane. And I submit that that's Mr. Viator actually didn't consider the other part of the statute that said you have to actually find a violation that he was speeding or at least going the speed limit, did not slow down his speed when he passed by the vehicle. What we have is the officer wanted to stop Mr. Cotton on a hunch based on what another officer had told him, that he acted suspicious and he had been handled for controlled substance before. The officer then claimed that he had an easy reason to stop him because he wasn't smart enough to move to the other lane. That's only half of the question, though. And I submit that the officer, in fact, should have been more careful about the traffic violation. The prolonged detention was simply a ruse to try to get some reason to continue his actions in investigating to see if he could find something on Mr. Cotton as part of his fishing expedition, and it was not related to this fictitious traffic violation. And the tape and the evidence reveals that Mr. Cotton limited his consent to his luggage only. So I submit that the overriding conclusion is that this was a warrantless stop and search, and of course that's presumably unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment, and the government failed to show otherwise adequate to warrant the denial of the motion to suppress. And I submit that the trial court should have granted the motion to suppress. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, I will save you time on rebuttal. Mr. Worthen?
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Baylor Wortham. I'm attorney for the United States. Your Honor, this case is about the constitutional search and seizure of contraband found within the natural void of a vehicle door that, under the facts of this case, falls squarely within the automobile exception of the Fourth Amendment exception to the warrant requirement. I urge this court to affirm the lower court's ruling denying the defendant's motion to suppress for several reasons. First, that the officers searched the vehicle did not exceed the scope of this consent. And alternatively, even if the scope of consent was intended to be limited, The officer's search was properly expanded upon the discovery of the hidden compartment. Second, the defendant's detention was not unconstitutionally prolonged because the officer had developed probable cause for further detention in the case, and then alternatively, he also received timely consent to search within the stop before the checks had come back. Now, a brief timeline, I won't reiterate the entire facts of this case, but just briefly I'd like to account for the timeline in this case, as I failed to do in my brief. On the videotape, the stop begins 50 seconds into the stop. About approximately 10 minutes into the stop is when the checks go out. The officer received consent approximately 12 minutes into the tape, and the returns came back at 17 minutes and 12 seconds onto the tape. The discovery of the contraband occurred at 54 minutes into the tape, which was 37 minutes from the time of the return and 42 minutes from the time of consent. Now, addressing each of the facts individually, as counsel raised regarding the basis for the stop, first, lower court found, upon reviewing all the evidence that was all the testimony that was presented and the videotape at the suppression hearing, that the specific findings were that Lieutenant Viator was a seasoned police officer and testified that he personally witnessed Cotton violate Texas Transportation Code 545.157. Accordingly, he had probable cause to stop the vehicle and support the court cites Wren, United States versus Wren in 517, United States Supreme Court. I'd contend to the court that the testimony of the officer at the lower court wasn't that the vehicle passed, then the radar checks went out, but rather that the radar check was somewhat more contemporaneous with the passing of the vehicle, and as he was getting into his vehicle, he checked the radar, which impression that I received upon the testimony was that it was already activated, and that's when he observed the vehicle was traveling approximately 70 miles an hour as it passed. Going into the issue as far as the scope of consent, I'd urge the court first that the officer received general consent to search. Now, the lower court held, in its opinion, specifically that Cotton's contention that he did not give general consent was somewhat undermined by the fact that he was not handcuffed, not placed in the patrol vehicle, was standing freely behind the vehicle and was watching as the search occurred, but failed to object to the scope of the search and also to withdraw, or also neglected to withdraw his consent during the course of the search. And in preparation of oral arguments, I found several cases by this court that were not mentioned in the brief that I would like to supplement after these arguments with a 28J letter. But those cases are United States versus McSween and United States versus Mendoza-Gonzalez, where this court has said that a person's failure to object to the scope of consent was indicative of the person's intent to give general consent. However, in the alternative, even if the scope of consent was intended to be limited in nature under the reasonable officer standard, I'd contend to the court that an officer, if given consent limited just to search luggage, would be allowed to look anywhere in a vehicle where luggage could reasonably be found. That'd be the trunk of the vehicle, the back seat, floorboard, underneath the seats, front floorboards, and those appropriate areas.
How's luggage going to be on the driver's side in the front?
Well, whether it be underneath the seat or perhaps not in obstruction of the gas or brake pedals, but I can imagine there being a small bag that somebody kept at the feet of their vehicle. I don't think that's unreasonable to think that there would possibly be a bag located in that location. However, the contraband in this case was found in the areas relating to the back seat of the vehicle.
Which side?
It was the driver's side. The driver's side rear door on a four-door vehicle. Now, the Eighth Circuit in United States versus Alvarez has a
The evidence was that he didn't open that door until after he'd gone and searched the luggage in the back seat, and he'd gone through all of that, and he'd already been in the back seat.
Well, Your Honor, he had 23 minutes onto the video. The officer opens the door for approximately 45 seconds as he's doing his general look through the vehicle.
Which door?
It was the rear driver's side door.
Okay, and he had 45 seconds to look.
He was, he gave a brief examination of that time of the back seat. And as he continued.
45 seconds, you could look the back seat, the back floor, the ledge behind it, all of that.
There was, you know, time to be able to conduct a search, Your Honor, but again, I would contend to you.
For the presence of luggage. That's all he's looking for.
Correct, Your Honor. But again, at the same time, as the officer was granted consent, and I contend to the court that consent to search or even look or double check would be valid until it was drawn by the defendant.
He had consent, presumably, for the sake of argument, to look for luggage. That's what you were describing under the driver's seat and so forth.
Right. Well, yes, Your Honor. In the alternative, there was even there's limited consent. That consent would allow the officer to get to examine in the back seat where the tool markings on the door were
but
discovered.
He had opened the back, I don't remember which side, but he had opened a back door, apparently had found luggage, had gone through the luggage, was done with the luggage in the back seat.
Well, he was examined most of the time during the search between the discovery of the contraband was spent examining the trunk and the items in the trunk. In fact, I think even one point as he's searching, the officer removed the spare tire to check to see if any contraband was hidden within the tire. But as the magistrate court found in his opinion, he noted that the officer's search was slow and methodical, but was slowly processing every single portion of the vehicle, analyzing, you know, exactly any areas where, you know, contraband or luggage could possibly be located.
Of course, it's broader than looking for luggage.
Well, Your Honor, I would just contend to you that the limited consent to search for luggage would allow that officer to look in the back seat. And upon looking in the back seat in plain view.
For luggage.
For luggage, but upon looking upon the back seat for luggage, the discovery of the tool markings there would expand the scope of the search to include the natural void.
Had he already opened the other back seat door prior to opening the driver's side back seat door?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So what was he looking for? He'd already checked the back seat.
He was checking the back seat, but it appeared as though after he began searching the trunk that he was doing a final pass-through or check of the vehicle, just going through and examining the doors as he was.
Looking at the doors is not looking for luggage or looking in luggage.
Well, I understand, Your Honor, but it's not the it's looking inside of the vehicle, but it's the plain view of what was observed from allowing him to look in that area. So if there's luggage could reasonably be found in the back
but
seat.
He'd already looked for luggage in the back seat and had not found any.
Well, I understand, Your Honor, but I don't believe that the consent would only allow someone to look one time, and I don't think it'd be unreasonable for an officer to go and take a second check to look to see if he had missed something.
Well, it's not like looking for a little bag of crack. It's luggage is luggage, and it's either going to be apparent from opening the door or not.
Well, I understand, Your Honor, but then if the scope of the officer's search or the time of this search had begun to become unreasonable, the defendant was free to.
Well, I thought you were contending there was a dispute as to whether the consent was limited to luggage or not, and the magistrate judge found that it was not limited to luggage. Is that correct?
Well, the magistrate judge did not address that specific issue. He found, for the argument's sake, that without needing to address the issue of general consent, that even upon the limited consent standard, that consent to search for luggage will allow him to look in the back seat and discover this.
We proceed as though the consent was limited to luggage, and then we get back to what you were just discussing, and
yes,
that's whether he did more than simply look for the presence of luggage.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, if it's something that's within plain view, then I contend he didn't have to open some sort of a compartment or something else to find the evidence of that hidden compartment.
The plain view of luggage is very different from the plain view of a little scratch on the head of a screw of a compartment.
Well, yes, Your Honor, but if that consent allows the officer to be in that area lawfully.
That's the whole question, does it?
Well, yes, Your Honor, I contend to you that it does.
Well, it allows him to look in and what would be a reasonable inspection to see if there is luggage, because there must be luggage before he can inspect the luggage, which is, we're assuming, is the limit of the consent.
True, Your Honor. You would need to be able to look for the luggage.
The passenger door first, come around and open that door, and you don't see any luggage. That's it.
Well, Your Honor, I contend to you that when dealing with consent, the consent is going to be valid, you know, until withdrawn and under the reasonable standard.
Nobody's questioned that he consented to search the luggage.
Yes.
The question is whether the officer exceeded a search for luggage to examine when he kept, for 45 seconds, digging around and looking for scratches on screw heads.
Well, Your Honor, again, I don't believe that it's prudent for the court to, you know, issue a time restriction on an officer's ability to search when given, you know, consent to search.
Not the time restriction, it's the what he did during that time.
Well, yes, Your Honor, but this is a plain view examination of what he saw in that area when he was allowed to look in that area.
There's no way luggage is going to be hidden with inside that door. That's not consent to take a screwdriver, unscrew a tiny screw, and start looking inside a hidden compartment in the door for luggage.
Yes, Your Honor, but that's why, as I cited in my brief, the United States versus Estrada and United States.
He could have said, "Let's get a warrant." At that point, he didn't have consent, but he didn't have the right to, without consent, to search.
Well, Your Honor, based upon this court's holding in Estrada, once there is discovery of evidence of a hidden compartment, this court has said that that supports probable cause to search that hidden compartment.
How that evidence of a hidden part compartment is discovered by the officer. And the point we're arguing about is whether it was reasonable for him to do any more than open the door, look in, see whether there's luggage or not, for him then to inspect. Not to, because he can look in the back seat, to do a microscopic examination of everything in there.
Well, I don't believe it came down to a microscopic examination, but I would again urge the court that the tool markings that were present on the back seat and in the door were in plain view, and the officer's ability to at least look in the back seat was included within the even limited consent to search for luggage.
If he opened the driver's side door first as he's looking for luggage, it might be a closer case, it seems. But he'd already opened the other side and had searched the back seat and was coming back around to check the doors. It sounds like not for luggage.
Well, Your Honor, again, I believe the reasonable officer standard would allow the officer to look underneath the seats and other areas that were small pieces of luggage or small bags to be located, and although he may have been able to look on from opening the opposite side door, I don't think it's unreasonable to allow the officer to go to the opposite side to open, to look, to get a better view on the other side of the vehicle. And again, this isn't, you know, a small vehicle like a compact vehicle. This is a Mercury Grand Marquis. It was a very large vehicle, it's a full-size vehicle, and it had a much larger area in the back seat than I'd say the average vehicle on the road. So, again, under the officer reasonable standard, I argue to the court that it was not unreasonable, even under limited consent, for him to check both sides of the door, look in the back seat, which
now
ultimately
led. The compartment was in the door, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. It was a natural void within the door.
So that door had been opened from the driver's side to look into the back seat?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. What does the door that's sticking outside coverage of the car, it's now out over the shoulder, there's no reason even to look at that panel. He's looking in the car for luggage. There can't be any luggage in the door.
Well, that is true, Your Honor, but if the door is there and it's in plain view, I don't believe it's unreasonable for an officer to be able to at least examine the general physical makeup of the door. I mean, it's just as though, and as this court said in Banuelos Romero, the officer was inspecting the windshield of the vehicle, which occurred during a traffic stop, and when he noticed the evidence of the hidden compartment.
All right. And what time of day was this?
This was in the late morning, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. This was about midday, around 11:30, 12 o'clock. So again, for the reasons I've stated, under the limits, so especially given this court's prior holdings in Estrada and Ben Willis Romero, I contend that the court to affirm the lower court's ruling regarding the officer's reasonableness to expand his search into that hidden compartment. The next issue I'd like to address is that the officer's stop was not unconstitutionally, that the defendant's stop was not unconstitutionally prolonged because the officer had properly developed probable cause to prolong the detention before the initial purpose of the stop was fulfilled. As noted in the factual summary and in my brief, the officer, when he initially conducted the stop, noticed that the vehicle failed to stop for approximately 1 mile, which Officer Viator, who testified in lower court, he had 20 years prior experience, 15 of which was involved in investigation of narcotics, testified that was a common tactic that he had seen by people trafficking illegal contraband in order for them to be able to coordinate their stories. He noted that there was extreme signs of nervousness as he interviewed the driver of the vehicle. He found that there was conflicting stories of their time in Houston, as well as conflicting stories on their travel to and from Houston. There were some unusual circumstances surrounding the terms of the car rental, and also found that there was a prior cocaine arrest that the defendant had not disclosed. As well as,
was that discovered before or after the license check came back?
It was discovered as the license check came back, Your Honor.
After?
Or as. It was that when the license check came back with the background of criminal history is when that prior arrest was disclosed.
No, but I'm saying his questioning of them separately about the Houston trip, wasn't that after the license cleared?
No, Your Honor. The questioning was before the license checks had gone out.
Okay.
The prior cocaine arrest, as well as the officer's familiarity that Interstate Highway 10 is a common drug trafficking corridor. And the lower court found that the officer's questioning exemplified a gradual response to emerging facts. And then alternatively, I would also represent to the court that the consent obtained from the defendant was timely received within the stop before the checks had been returned. And so in the alternative, that in addition to there being probable cause to search, there was also a consensual stop aspect to the case.
What highway were they on?
This is Interstate Highway 10, Your Honor.
So all the interstates are common for drug traffic? What about all the cases we say, oh, they took a back road because they didn't want to be discovered?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think I could represent.
It looks like to me every highway is common for drug traffic if you are the police.
Well, Your Honor, I don't mean to represent to the court that every single United States highway is a drug trafficking corridor, but I will represent to the court that the drugs that are imported into this country come up from the valley on the Texas-Mexico border and are brought into Houston and do get to from Houston to the eastern corridor of the United States, you have to take Interstate Highway 10.
We had the same argument about I-20 out of Odessa when we reversed, and that was one of the reasons.
Well, I can understand, Your Honor, but I can represent to the court that there is a significant amount of narcotics that are moved across Interstate Highway 10.
A significant amount that are moved everywhere.
That's true, Your Honor. But again, I can contend to you, based upon this officer's experience and his 15 years of interdiction and narcotics investigations, that he was familiar with intercepting far more narcotics on Interstate Highway 10 than any of the other surrounding highways. In Your Honor, I see my time has expired. May I briefly conclude?
Thank you, sir. Okay. Mr. Barlow, you have 5 minutes on rebuttal.
I have nothing lengthy to add other than I, again, urge that it's the totality of these circumstances that we get almost into an hour for the stop and the search that's based upon what purports to be a traffic violation, and the traffic violation just actually just kind of goes out the window, and I submit that it's that totality of circumstances that demonstrates a Fourth Amendment violation, this continued detention for almost an hour before the contraband is found. And that was the obvious purpose of the stop to begin with. The actions of the officer were not actually related to what he purported to stop him for, the transportation code violation.
So you say that there was no valid consent, but if there was, it was limited to the luggage and he exceeded the scope?
I think it was clearly that limited to the luggage, and that consent was obtained after this purported traffic stop and a lengthy detention.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Barlow. You're court appointed, and the court appreciates your service and thanks you
Thank you.
For representing